Hey guys, your favorite blockhead has some very exciting news. I want to let you guys know that your favorite blockhead is now a proud member of the Yogi's Podcast Network. YFB is proud to bring you more content from my friends Mike and Toria over at The Nightly Rant. So you can follow their shows on the Yogi's Podcast Network, which will include Peeling the Orange, which will deal with all the issues in Orange County, The Nightly Rant, Liberty Revealed, and even one of my favorites, the Elite Podcast Academy, where you can learn everything you want to know about being a professional podcaster, be able to reach more people and give your influence, even work on monetization and on podcast notes, you name it. This course will walk you through how to be a better podcaster. And your favorite blockhead is always very blessed to mention his membership with the Dose Leprechauns Podcast Network. You can find those links on the show, and you can always find Dose Leprechauns on iTunes and on YouTube. That being said, what do you say we go ahead and start the show, shall we? Broadcasting live, and I have hit record, and here we are. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are officially at episode 100. It's finally here. And as unprepared as I could be, I bring to you almost a brain dump in this entire episode. Now, before I turned it on, I kept wondering, is there going to be a proper way to do this? To celebrate the big 100. And all I've got is reflection. All I've got is gratitude. I have snippets of some of my favorite moments all the way up until this point. I have 6 gracious guests who have come and gone, some who will return, some who it might take a few extra nudges to get to come back to the show, because life happens. The only thing I've got tonight is James chapter 4, verse 10. It seems like it's the only fitting scripture of the day that can even resonate with what I'm feeling. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up. You'll notice in this episode there are not going to be any included affiliate promos. I will, however, leave into the description, if you are so kind, are so willing, or who are genuinely interested, I will leave the links up for my Ko-fi account and for my Patreon account. I don't want to seem like I'm too exploitative. Is that the correct terminology here to use? I don't want to seem like I am forcing any extra affiliate links in between the content here. This is just, we've hit a pinnacle. Most shows don't even make it to episode number 10. Pod fading is a real thing. And here we are. Your favorite blockhead has hit this milestone, this landmark day. And I'm thankful to all of you that have tuned in, whether you came in the middle of the ride or if you strapped in from the beginning. You've been with me this far, and for that, I thank you. And I would hope that that would be the humbler that I would need to make sure that my pride gets obliterated and that my service unto you will continue from this point on, providing content, providing storytelling that only the blockhead can bring, combining a trinity of 3 worlds you wouldn't find anywhere else, the comic strip of Peanuts, undoubtedly the most successful comic strip that's one step above the competition, has been for the last several decades, that we can adhere to the past, we can remember that history is to a society what memory is to an individual, as Gordon Wood once said. and how that can apply to if we've ever wondered how we got to the spot where we are. The cycle is just making a full turn. And also, I will take the fairly new sport in the scope of all sports, that is MMA, where most Americans don't embrace it near as much as the rest of the world. Millions upon millions will tune into playoff day for the NFL, whereas the same amount of people internationally, tens of millions of people will tune in to a UFC event, especially one that's overseas, whether it happens to be in Melbourne, Australia, or Russia, or Ireland. There's just nothing in the world quite like it these days. Except maybe, with the exception, maybe soccer. Or football, depending on what area of the globe you tend to be visiting. And I give all this just to say that, again, how do I embrace coming this far, except with some gratitude and with a little bit of humble pie, to have the opportunity, to have the ability, to have the listenership. For those of you, most of the time when you're listening to my show, most of you that have reached out to me have told me that it tends to be when you are not hitting the daily grind. It's when you are maybe doing some chores around the house. Maybe you're working in the lawn. Maybe you happen to be on a nightly run. You might be at the gym. You might be driving home. You might be settling into the evening for just some much-needed R&R. And that's when you tend to listen to this show. And that has been the demographic I've wanted to serve from Jump Street, was those of you that are in chillax mode, I guess you could say. If that was my intent and my motive all along. And there's just so much that I want to, again, I feel like I'll cram into this episode, but again, it's going to be more of a brain dump. It's going to be several fragments that have brought us to this point where we put the jigsaw together that is your favorite blockhead and bringing us to this day. And there also have been some instances that have come up. So I'm watching Netflix, and I happen to find, normally I'm not a guy that, it's not like I'm suffering some type of illness and, oh, maybe the only thing that's on right now is Jeopardy. Something about Jeopardy, the IBM challenge, really captured my attention. If you haven't watched this, you might want to consider seeing at least the first part of it. You have the two most distinguished Jeopardy players in the history of the game versus a computer simulation made by none other than IBM. And this is a well put together, almost like a redheaded stepchild of HAL 3000 from 2001 A Space Odyssey. If we look into before there was ever Siri, before Alexa was ever talking to us in our kitchens, there was a guy named Watson who was taking on the competition on Jeopardy. So again, if you want to check it out, it's on Netflix, Jeopardy the IBM Challenge, or the IBM Edition, where Watson competes. And it's interesting how when so much, I really had a huge pop for this, because yes, this computer program is taking both of these competitors to task. But yet we get to Final Jeopardy, and it asks a question about, the topic was U.S. cities. And it said something along the lines of, these two well-known airports, one named after a World War II hero, or one after named after a World War II battle. Well, once we get this is what's interesting to me. This is where not everything in a computer program simulation can be trusted. Where both of the contestants got where Chicago, as in the Chicago O'Hare Airport. And Watson's response was, what is Toronto? We didn't know until watching this episode that Toronto was a U.S. city, but apparently, according to Watson, it is. But what got me was not so much his answer. I was a little bit awestruck in that he can have such a foolish glitch, especially when so much counted on Final Jeopardy because these other guys had wagered every bit of their earnings to be able to reach maybe $9,000 to $10,000. When Watson's sitting at $36,000, and he could have wagered his entire earnings and gone flat busted. What was his wager? $947. If that is not the most gangster move made by a computer simulation, step aside Siri and Alexa, because the elder millennial known as Watson just showed all of you how it's done. If you ever want to go on to Jeopardy, you might want to follow the floor plan that Watson had put together through IBM and through that crack team of well-known scientists and computer simulation experts that were there with IBM. Most of them were sitting in the audience. So again, it was a lot of fun to be able to sit back and watch that episode. I can't sit through all the episodes of Jeopardy, but that one, the IBM challenge, really had my attention. Showed me the advancement in technology. So it makes me wonder how, if podcasting is where it is now in the pioneer stages, then what can we expect in the future? Because now we got the groundwork that leads to current day. What could be working up in the minds of the amazing talent that's out there right now working with things like iTunes and Spotify? What else could be in the shadows lurking until the time comes for it to emerge and change the world forever? And I give you all that just because it's almost like when I take pieces of this, and I also take how, as I started this show, I just wonder, how am I going to put it all together? And I thought, okay, what led me to this point? I can remember getting, I was in my last month of being in the Navy. And I think every night when I was in San Diego, I was playing on my phone, I was playing on YouTube, this video of a band called The Calling. Most people will know their smash hit, Wherever You Will Go. I know them for more of the lesser songs on that album. There's one called Adrian, one called Just That Good, another one that's Unstoppable is the very first song on the album. As we get into the very last song, it's called Stigmatized. Maybe that's where we can go full circle, where Blockhead is listening on the wet side of San Diego, where I'm just looking out at the water at nightfall and hearing these lyrics about, we will live our lives, we'll take the punches every day. We'll live our lives, I know we're going to find our way. And all of this has led to where we are today with a podcast with a few listeners, with a tribe, with a community, with known as a Blockhead Nation that could not be more grateful for. So as you listen to this show, know that this is dripping with gratitude and that there are going to be snippets of many other parts of the shows that I've enjoyed. You're about to hear a episode from number 47, I believe it was. This is the one that I really enjoyed doing about Spindletop. Take a listen. Here's the main point I want to bring up about Spindletop is this. Not to brag on Texas, not to say this is where the oil refineries and the oil industry started its boom and that it changed everything, which it did. But I'll say this. It started off with improvisation. A lot of you that are out here on podcasting, it's almost like I listen to some of your shows, and I see some of you afraid to improvise a little bit. Maybe just to go from the hip. Why not be vulnerable more with your listeners? This is something I'm willing to do. I mean, I've already had a couple of glitches now. I'm like, man, I should go back and restart my podcast, and I'm not going to do it. Because I want to be vulnerable with you. Blockhead is just telling you like it is. What you see is what you get. And you can't see me because you're a blind audience, so sorry for that little pun. But if you go back, one of the improvisations that comes out of Spindletop, you know, they're digging through miles and miles of sand and rock in Texas soil. And they have to improvise. What do? They round up a herd of cattle, and they send it through a puddle to where they can splash around in the pool, and they can make a bunch of mud. Any of you that have ever been in the oil fields or might still be out there now, they use a synthetic compound now. They still refer to it as what? To this day, it is still called mud. It's going to keep the lubrication. It's going to allow them, because of that mud, they're able to go further and further into the soil, into the rock, into the sand,
and they're trying to get down to about 1,200 feet. And this is actually documented from the Hamill brothers. They're expecting to get maybe 50 barrels of oil out of this. Their investors are counting on results. And there's an actual document that said something like this. I'm going to give you a quick rundown of what was said. I walked over to the hole, and I heard something bubbling. Looked down, and this frothy oil was starting up and sinking back down with the gas pressure, and then over the rotary table, and each flow a little higher, and a little higher, and a little higher, and you can see the Hamill brothers just tearing off of this rig and scrambling away just as this gusher, as this geyser spews through the oil derrick, almost 200 feet into the air. And thus you have the oil boom that takes place. Now, me, I'm looking at that for the first day. I'm thinking, man, I would be standing underneath that oil, too. I would have tears and that nasty black liquid run down my face. And I'd be saying, you know what? I'll never have to work another day in my life. But by the second day, I'd be like, we need to cap this bad boy. This cleanup is going to be costly. 9 days spewing out of the ground until they can finally cap the oil. All started through improvisation. So do you need to be worried about the unknown? You probably shouldn't. 9 solid days. And then you go further into time when somehow the encouragement 1 year ago was to bust out a blues lick. When at that time I was really getting into some of the reviews and the analysis that was coming out for a well-known actor known as Andy Griffith, but a role that is the exact antithesis to the Sheriff of Mayberry, which would be Lonesome Rhodes, from A Face in the Crowd. And somehow, some way, all of that concluded with me busting out with this little masterpiece. Take a listen. Well, it got me to thinking, and it got me to strumming a little bit. And this is what came out of it. Well, I'm 6,000 miles down the road, and I don't even know the time of day. Yes, I'm 6,000 miles down the road. Don't even know the time of day. Just tell my mama I'll be 6,000 feet under before my mind's gonna change. Fingers are hurting a little bit, but the blues and blockhead is coming back a little bit. Almost like a phoenix rising out of Arizona, and there hopes to be more music out there. Maybe this will end up on Spotify. Maybe I can find that songwriter side of me again, but the blues has got me by the throat, and I'm just... It's coming back to, while this disciplined, painful time is coming, and it's harvesting the righteousness and peace inside of me to be able to share with you, I go back to what I have here. Make every effort to live in peace with everyone and be holy. Now, I'm not saying anything here is holy in the context of blues, but you know, it's bringing out one of my old talents. What say you about that, podcasting world? And of course, to only go a couple of months back, we do have that one episode where I continuously used Bugs Bunny's well-known to-do phrase as he is about to hit that blockbuster bomb.
What am I doing?
Gives me a chuckle every time. I mean, you can't tell me there are not times in your life when you have not had one of those
what am I doing
moments.
You gotta love it.
So, and I'm sure there are plenty more that I have missed here. You can always go back and you can check the guests out. There are more that are supposed to come. There are others that have asked to come back on the show. There's a few more that are waiting in the wings that we have to make sure we get to. And I don't know if I ever brought this up, but I'm going to go ahead and share it here. Just know that your favorite blockhead will never run for president. I was asked that by a student once. How come you haven't run for president? And I think about how, even though I enjoy the audio concept of podcasting, there's something about me having a voice for radio that is ample for me in this particular realm. And as I listen to the book that's an audiobook called Jab Until It Hurts, that's saying that I need to stick with the storytelling and the creative concept. Don't need to be wearing too many hats as time goes on. Know how to hand some of these little jobs off to my dream team that'll come in due time. But, you know, you would not have any type of privacy. There's so many liberties I would have to give up that I enjoy way too much, especially when it comes to my alone time. I remember back in college, we were doing a little get-to-know-each-other round table, and one guy said something about, Brian seems like a guy who does enjoy being around people, but he also looked like he's a guy who has to have his alone time too. And he was absolutely on point. He was absolutely right. I am one of those people who will, if I don't get my alone time, I will fight for it. I believe that's just a part of my inferiority complex. That's a part of my upbringing. That's part of being an only child, where some people don't know how to be by themselves and some people crave it. Believe me, being by myself can be a very beneficial thing. And so it would not be undisturbed. It would be monitored. And I think, man, if I was to do that, I'd make sure I was the first president in history, even if I did, to make sure that I got fired within a week. I'd be like, I would ruin that right out of the gates. I would throw the doors open, do an Andrew Jackson thing where everybody could come in and party. I'd throw down some wrestling mats on the South Lawn. I would probably construct an MMA cage on the West Wing. I would use Air Force One to fly in Chael Sonnen so he could be my guest of honor for the night. And within a week, I'd be gone. And what am I to worry about? I can write a book and I have a speaking tour. And I guarantee I'd make more a year than I would as the president anyway. So I'd say I'd be pretty set if I did something like that. But no interest in, other than having a chance to be a storyteller. And this outlet, this emotional outlet, this forum, this platform of podcasting has allowed me to do just that. Okay, stop the presses. Everybody turn and listen. I told you there was going to be some extra spins in this episode, and this is a perfect example. I was asked my opinion on Toy Story 4. Okay. Do I mind a feel-good movie? Absolutely not. Did I actually enjoy myself? Yes, I did. Do I appreciate that there were many moments that were tearjerkers? Absolutely. Do I really mind that Tom Hanks and Tim Allen did it again? Meaning, if there was no other reason for this movie to be made except for two friends amongst everybody else in the cast to reunite and run it back, as they say in MMA. Got no problem, no issues with that at all. To quote one of the characters in this movie, not going to give a lot of spoilers, but I am going to use one term used by none other than Forky. How I feel that most of the dialogue between all of the other characters, except for Woody and for Forky and for our little girl and for even
Even Bo. If I just take everybody else, including Buzz Lightyear, who has one of the most iconic phrases in movie cinema history, to quote Forky on how I feel they were treated, meaning excluding the lines for Woody and for Forky and for Bo, and all of the original cast, from Buzz Lightyear all the way down. To quote Forky,
trash.
I don't know if I have any other. Maybe I could say American Standard, because that's how much of a peon so many of them in this movie were made out to be. I'm not kidding. Buzz Lightyear was a guy who was disillusional in the first Toy Story that got smartened up by the second one. I look at him in this one here. So again, it shows me that Toy Story is just like anything else. You are not above the law of diminishing marginal utility. That too much of a good thing is not a good thing. That when you run the first one, Toy Story 1 and 2, I will always believe are masterpieces. I believe by the third one, we're stretching this story a little too thin. Now we get to the fourth one. Other than a feel-good movie, I don't see what closure we were given as an audience. Now, could you do a subsection and make it all about Woody or about Bo or maybe about just Buzz Lightyear? Have one movie called Buzz. I guess you could do that. But my question is, why? There were so many great movies that have never even had a sequel, and we still cherish them to this day. There was no reason to make a second Sandlot movie. I have yet to see a remake of The Princess Bride, and I hope they don't. Toy Story 4... just seems to be kicking a dead horse. And even though Tom Hanks had his moments, and Bo had his moments, and little Forky, aka Trash, I'm not giving away too much dialogue there, but again, that is all I can think to say, is how Buzz Lightyear came across as an imbecile. I mean, he really did. It's almost like he went back to being delusional. How do we miss that? How do we allow him to be, in so many ways, not even a blockhead, but a knucklehead? How did we allow for Rex and for Slinky and for Ham and for Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head, who had so many lines that were shared in the first two episodes? They were not, even though they might have been supporting actors, they were not so much peons as they were on this one. Because they barely got a chance to talk. That includes Jesse and Bullseye. I mean, so much of their story got excluded in this one. And that tells me that it is... there's no other smoke, any more smoke in the barrel. What more are you going to do with this beautifully done movie? How are we going to let it go to a fourth one? So it's my criticism. On a scale of 1 to 10, I can only give this movie maybe a 6.5. When it comes to the graphics and animation, as always, it's beautiful. I always appreciate a feel-good moment, one that I know that is a safe movie to take my family to. But I can't look past how little dialogue the rest of the cast even had in this. It seems like there were still so many loose ends at the end. How you can say this is conclusive to the entire saga? You know, continuing past the trilogy into the fourth one, how can you say that everything is tied neatly with a bow wrapped around at the end? Maybe I'm just missing something here. And now for dessert. Now that we have cleansed your palate. There is a friend of mine I was discussing this episode about. Discussing this episode too. And I told him simply that I had evidence that he did it. If you refer back to my Confronting the R Word episode, that means that on this podcast, through all these little jigsaw puzzles we are piecing together, when we take a look at the final big picture, there is one little almost excluded blockbuster down at the far left corner that I have substantial evidence that O.J. Simpson killed Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman. Now, you have been convinced from the beginning whether he is guilty or not guilty. Not too long ago, I told you to check out a podcast called Confronting O.J. by Kim Goldman. It's intense. It's a nail biter. And I will be tuning into every single episode that comes up. But to take you back a little bit, I also watched a documentary completely on the LA riots as a result of the Rodney King verdict. It's disturbing. It's shameful. It's wicked what happened on the streets of Los Angeles as a result of that. And we know this. 1992 was a scary time to be in that city. And in so many ways, the O.J. verdict was retribution for not only the policeman that walked free, but the Korean store owner that walked free as well. That had been brewing in the hearts of so many African Americans in that community and so many citizens around the world, especially in our beloved nation. And why I say that I have evidence. One, if you need it, check out the podcast. How ironic at the same time that Twitter comes out and the Juice says he has some, quote, getting even to do. Another piece of the puzzle would be that when he is released upon his arrival home, he gives an impromptu speech about how he will dedicate the rest of his life to finding the actual killers. How has that worked out for you 25 years later? I'd like to know. Inquiring minds of this podcast would like to know. But when I say I have evidence, it's something that nobody else caught this key element. Now, I didn't have to say it. Chris Rock said it for me. In his comedy stand-up, he is saying, please tell me what we won. Every day I go to my mailbox to get my OJ prize, nothing. And then later on, Chris Rock makes a DVD compilation of all of the best episodes of The Chris Rock Show. And in the beginning of that, he says, hey, do you remember when OJ dropped by and dropped off his instructional VHS? I didn't kill my wife, but if I did, here's how I'd do it. So before it became a number one bestseller called If I Did It, it was a VHS home video. I think you get my point. And as we get into the book, there is a interview that happened, I believe, in 2006 on Fox that was removed from the network because it was so offensive and so atrocious. But I take you to the one scene. Go find this on YouTube. Take a look at him talking about how hypothetically he puts himself back into the situation in 1994. That evening, what happened? He's talking about his confidant, aka a schizophrenic alter ego of himself known as Charlie, who somehow brings the knife into the house from the Bronco. And here's where he makes his critical mistake. Follow me on this one. He starts to talk about how he is exchanging words with Ron, and then Nicole comes in, and they exchange some words too. And he says, I know that at some point Nicole hurt herself. Now here's what I'm getting at. This is coming from a man's perspective. This is coming from somebody not only that is an MMA fan, but just knows the intuitive emotions of a man. He mentions that Ron gets into a type of karate stance, to which he retorts, oh, you think you can kick my A double squiggles? And then, of course, he says he grabs, and I quote, grabs the knife from Charlie. And then there's a blackout, and he doesn't remember anything else except that there was a bunch of, quote, stuff around. Which, any good interview, she would ask, what kind of stuff? Blood and stuff. Guys, men don't forget. He wasn't going into the narrative of the book here. He was remembering Ron actually sizing him up, going into a karate stance, and his response as a man. Whether he's in the right or in the wrong or not, even though he is a malicious killer, you don't forget when somebody sizes you up. When somebody gets into a position and pretty much says, knuck if you buck, boy, you don't forget this. He put himself back into that moment and started saying, he was talking in first person. There's where you blew your cover, OJ. David Frost did the same thing with Richard Nixon in an interview in 1977. He was able to get him to admit that he was part of a cover-up from the Watergate scandal. This interview from 2006 on Fox News, whether you agree with Fox and their stance of being fair and balanced or not, you got the verdict. America got what it wanted right in that instance. O.J. Simpson is guilty. You know it. I know it. It's being said on this podcast. I'm not sorry for it. But O.J., you're going to meet your judgment one day. And Blockhead just gave proof on this podcast that you are as guilty as sin. And I urge you to continue to watch and to continue listening to Confronting OJ, the podcast from Kim Goldman. There's where I stand. Now somebody debate. And as I leave my links up for you and I bid you adieu tonight, I throw out more thank yous. I tip my humble hat unto you, the Blockhead Nation. And just be prepared that there is going to be some new shows coming up. There will be episodes for This Is America, You Blockhead, coming soon. It'll be the Transcontinental Railroad. Taking many of notes for that one. Super excited about that episode. Taking an entire episode to do the first YFB's MMA breakdown, completely diagnosing and analyzing everything about UFC 239. You can expect that on the horizon. This has been your favorite Blockhead, and we will see you same Blockhead time, same Blockhead channel. Good night, friends.